From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Since President Trump reached his 100th day in office, a whirlwind of stories about Trump have dominated the headlines. From the firing of FBI Director James Comey, to reports that the president provided Russian officials with classified information, and of course, the news that Trump may have asked Comey to shut down the investigation into former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn. Voters are paying close attention as a special election approaches in Georgia's 6th congressional district. Midterm elections also coming up next year. To read the pulse on a deeply divided America, I led a panel discussion hosted by the Atlanta Press Club. I was joined by New York Times national correspondent Richard Fawcett, Wall Street Journal political reporter Cam McWhirter, and CNN anchor and correspondent Martin Savage. I asked Martin in front of a live audience if the race in Georgia's 6th district would be this competitive were Trump not in office.
I mean, in some respects, I think that it was, on a local level, a do-over, especially for those who were upset with the outcome of the election of 2016. There were a lot of Democrats that walked into that election with a sense that this was a done deal, that Hillary Clinton was going to win. It didn't turn out that way. So now this race became a way to say, all right, we are going to do everything we can to upset and win this particular race. We're not going to be asleep at this time. But one of the aspects that has, at least from the voters I've talked to, and especially on the Republican side, they're very upset about, is all the money pouring in, a vast majority of it, out from outside of the district. So clearly that is an indication that this is not a race that is focused on local issues and focused on local candidates.
Well, and it's hard for Republicans to make that case when the president is treating it like a proxy vote for as well. But let's go back to this 100 days and what has changed and what has not changed. So let's talk about those Trump supporters who've changed their mind. And the reason I ask that is because I happen to have one, two, three. The next three houses next to me are all Trump supporters. Two of them voted for Trump because of foreign policy. They thought Hillary Clinton was more likely to get us involved into another war. And so they were the first to become disenchanted over Donald Trump and his decisions, because now they're afraid we could be in a war in any minute. But let's talk about who has started to waver, because we've heard a lot about Trump supporters who don't care what's said about the president, don't care what he said. We've heard from them a lot. But what about these ones who are either wavering or have wavered? Who wants to take this one?
I haven't found him.
You haven't found him. Richard?
To sort of amplify that sentiment, this dear friend of mine, very conservative guy, spent 2 hours talking to him on the phone today. And he said, I voted for Trump, but it was really a vote against Hillary. And I said, how do you feel now? And he says, every morning I wake up and Hillary's not the president, and so I feel pretty good. And I think that's a pretty common sentiment. I think the revelations in the Post are gonna be fascinating. You know, at some point, does that bubble get burst with this competence issue, if that's indeed what it is? At some point, do voters who've been sticking with him get the information, for one, that says, you know, this guy may have made a really big mistake, and perhaps there are a cascading series of mistakes that add up to a pattern that speak to a competence issue? Or, you know, is he really that Teflon with 36% to 39% of the populace? I don't know the answer to that.
At the last John Oliver show, one of the most recent ones, he had this super cut of Jeffrey Toobin saying on every single show, this is not normal, this is not normal, this is not normal, this is not normal. So, and we all know, as journalists, this is not normal. What's happened, many of the things that are happening, for good or ill, are not normal. They're not what's happened in other administrations. So is there another way to say this that might help give context to voters in distinguishing what's significant and what's a tiny little match on fire and what's a flame? Is there any way that we're missing out on that helps people distinguish between what's important and what isn't?
In all fairness, some of the voters I've been talking to who are sticking with Trump see a very rational reason to stick with him. It's not a delusion. If you believe in unwinding the a very large and what appears to you to be an oppressive federal government, an overreaching federal government, you have a lot to be very happy about right now. You've got a new conservative on the Supreme Court who's very highly regarded. You have Scott Pruitt at EPA. You have Tom Price at Health and Human Services. You have Betsy DeVos at the Department of Education. You have Chris Kobach now running as sort of vice chairman of a special voting rights council. There's an impulse in the Republican Party that you can really feel when you talk to conservative voters, and not just working class ones, that there needs to be a revolution. The revolutionary impulse is there with the Republican Party. They look askance at the people in the past who tried to work in concert with Democrats and legislate with the Democrats. They want the revolution. And from that perspective, if that's what you want, I think in many cases you're very pleased with what you've seen the last 100 days.
I agree. I think that many people who voted for Trump, especially you had a lot of crossover voters, very dissatisfied with Washington in general. They were really voting against Congress, and they found a person who was the voice that spoke out against everything that was wrong with Washington. So anytime that Trump does something that looks to be totally against what Washington believes is the set rule or the way it's done or the proper protocol, they're rooting him on because they say he knows that the system doesn't work. So even something like this, which is coming out with, first of all, the president has the right to say and talk with, it's not against the law. Anybody below him absolutely would be brought up on charges of treason, but the president of the United States does not face that. They would say, he's the man, we put him in office, he talks to whoever he wants and says whatever he wants, and quite frankly, if he's doing it in a way that seems to be putting a finger in Washington's eye, I love it. That's what they'll say.
I mean, we all write stories that don't theoretically have to do with Donald Trump, and yet I can tell you they do, because every story I've written since January, if it's regarding any kind of political aspect whatsoever, Donald Trump's name comes up. And for example, I wrote a story about Confederate monuments being challenged across the South, and Donald Trump was raised as both the opponents of these monuments, wanting these monuments removed, and both supporters of these monuments brought up his name as, obviously they felt that the supporters of these monuments felt that this was a reason, that this guy's defending them, this guy's bringing up, he's fighting for what's right. He's sort of he's a symbol that they can pour their images into. And one other thing I would mention, I did a story on evolution, just a quirky little feature story about a little town in Dayton, Tennessee, where they're fighting over whether to put up a statue to Clarence Darrow. The people who don't want that statue up because they don't believe in evolution, said Donald Trump is our president. We don't have to put up with this anymore.
Just a reminder, Clarence Darrow, of course, was the attorney that tried the Scopes monkey trial. That's the connection with evolution. But that brings us to an important point, which is that there are some things that have raised red flags, such as the rally that Richard Spencer organized with burning torches. There was, of course, the feds just busted that ring in Kansas that wanted to bomb the housing of all the refugees that are living in that tiny town in Kansas. And in fact, an interesting thing about that story was their defense was that they'd been so bombarded with fake news that it was impossible for them to distinguish between what was true and what was not. So the last time we talked about fake news, and I feel like here we are again, in terms of talking about are we any smarter on what to do about that? The fact that American voters don't know what is true, many don't know what is true and what is not.
News is not fake, and fake is not news. So, and it's been called other things in the past. This is not a new phenomenon. We called it propaganda in the past. Or we called it disinformation in the past. It was an attempt by either governments or individuals to portray something that was not. And it is manufactured information that is either done with a specific cause or with a specific mindset. The way you combat it is you have to, one, speak the truth out of our organizations, and the public itself has to make sure that it is relying on what we would say traditional reliable news outlets. We all just listen to the stations we like. We all get the podcasts we like. We don't sit and read the newspaper front to back anymore. We just jump ahead to the things we like. And in doing so, eventually, you're just going to have a tighter and tighter circle of the things you like or listen to, till eventually you know a lot about very little. And you have to broaden the whole horizons of what you look to and where you turn for information. It's not easy. It's like roughage. It's not something you like to eat necessarily, but it's darn good for you. And journalism is that way. You have to consume it in a way that you take stuff you don't normally like.
So we are kale. some of the things that journalists feared when Donald Trump was elected seem to be coming to pass. We had a journalist arrested for asking questions of Tom Price. We had journalists excluded from the Oval Office when he was meeting with the Russians. Of course, we don't even talk about how CNN needs to, what are you guys in the Saturday Night Live skits, you're always in the cage? Yeah. There's also, of course, Donald Trump quite famously a few days ago just hinted that he might be getting rid of press briefings and replace those with a written statement, which would mean he's effectively shutting off his administration to answer questions. So this is something we feared. It's happening. We seem to be among the only people in America that are really all that concerned about it. Maybe there's too many other fires going. But what do we do about that? And especially in terms of our reporting, that's sometimes a fine line to march when you're talking about your own rights being trampled on and explain that to people without sounding like we're whining.
We might be the roughage, but we keep you regular. That's our. I think our the job of the three of us up here is really to just put forth the information that we gather. And I think Cam said something like this, very similar the last time we were together. Do the reporting, make sure it's correct, put it out into the ether, and leave it as a viable option for people. There's really not much more we can do. I think it's an interesting thought experiment to wonder what we would really lose right now if Trump did shut down the daily press briefings. They're riddled with inaccuracy now. Most of the really great reporting that's been happening has not been based off of what's been said in the daily press briefing. Maybe we should just try, I'm not endorsing this, but just as a thought experiment, maybe we should just consider letting him do what he wants, and well, we can't do it, stop it anyway.
Well, if you're going to say that, then let me hand it to Cam.
I don't think press briefings are ever really that useful. And certainly in this administration, they haven't been very useful. I'm more concerned about how are they going to start treating Freedom of Information Act requests, how they're going to be holding meetings regarding the FCC, things like that. I think that's going to be where really the rubber meets the road in terms of how this administration acts towards the media. I think that thus far there's been a lot of great reporting coming out. So whatever he's doing to try to rein it in, he's not doing a very good job.
That was Wall Street Journal political reporter Cam McWhirter. We also heard from Richard Fawcett of the New York Times and Martin Savage of CNN. More of that conversation is just ahead. This is On Second Thought. It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. This hour, we're hearing a panel discussion I hosted for the Atlanta Press Club on voter reaction to the Trump administration. I spoke in front of a live audience in Atlanta to three journalists, Cam McWhirter of the Wall Street Journal, Richard Fawcett of the New York Times, and Martin Savage of CNN. A few weeks ago, a health care bill championed by Republicans narrowly made it out of the U.S. House. I asked Martin if the unpopularity of the bill will be reflected in support for President Trump.
Well, the issue on healthcare initially was the fact that they saw the first plan that was put forward defeated by Congress. They blamed Congress. They didn't blame the president. He came up with a plan, and Congress didn't get behind it. They were angry at Congress. It only verified what they already knew in their vote, which was they really hate Congress. The second plan that's come forward, many people believe, well, look, I've heard a little bit about it. They aren't as deeply engrossed in it as we all are. And so they can't tell you the exact details. They will just say, I voted for the guy. I trust the guy. It's got to be a good plan. The interesting thing was I just came from, we were out west, and we talked to three different doctors, three different backgrounds, and three different politics. One's a libertarian, one's a Republican, one's a Democrat. We asked them, well, how does it compare to Obamacare? Which plan do you like? They don't like either plan. They think both plans are a recipe for disaster because they both overly rely on the health insurance industry, which cannot be the answer because they say it's only fueling the skyrocketing cost of healthcare, period. So the doctors don't like either plan.
Yeah, the only politician so far, well, one of the only vocal ones that actually they would be happy with then would be Bernie Sanders because he's the one that's promoting a single payer. Then do we know if there's a weakness in support that should this thing happen, then the president would lose their support?
Say that they all turn against the president. It's not like you get a half, 2 years into office and say, that's it, let's have a special election. We don't get to call that. Well, if they're dissatisfied, what is the option then? To then say, I am really dissatisfied with the president. Oh, we got three more years. I don't think that they're going to come forward with that kind of admission.
You're saying even if they were dissatisfied, you don't think they'd admit it?
I would say that what they would, the alternative for them, and we discussed this already, was that it was Hillary Clinton. So they were not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. So at what point why would they come forward and say, I'm so dissatisfied now, the other option is at this point what? It becomes just mind candy to say, well, is there another president we can pull out real quickly and put in his place?
I think that Richard brought it up earlier. The issue is that 38%, Nixon, I think, I mean, polling was different then, but Nixon, when he was tanking in Watergate, was in the 25, 26% range. And so the key question is between that 36%, what's going to drive people down to that level? And I don't know what it is because, you know, this big revelation about Russia, people already know, have already calculated that into their minds. That's not going to change anyone's mind who supports the president. That's not going to change their mind. So what is it going to be? I don't know what it would be. Healthcare derailed. He pushed this thing, it hit the skids. Those people still support Donald Trump. I think the real question is going to be in the midterms. That's when the rubber meets the road. In the midterms, is he going to be pounded? I don't know. I don't think anyone's going to predict that that's the case. Clearly, this 6th district race is a proxy for that fight that's coming.
In 2018, raises an interesting conundrum for the Democrats. They were chanting "na na na na, hey hey hey, goodbye," right? When AHCA passed in the House, they obviously think they've got a lot of really vulnerable Republicans now who are sitting in vulnerable House seats. I think we're all going to be watching what kind of tack the Democrats take. You think back to 2016. How Hillary Clinton's people were the reporting is that they were frustrated that she didn't have a message as to why she wanted to be president. And a lot of the messaging was, can you believe this guy? This guy is a jerk. It didn't work. Is the Comey thing something they can run on? There's a theory out there in Democratic circles that this is a process question and no one's gonna care about it. There's just a bunch of noise in Washington. Does it rise beyond the level of that at some point? I've not checked this out, but a friend of mine told me that Carville was talking about this the other day, that just treat him like any old candidate, which apparently means run on the AHCA. Run against the fact that people with pre-existing conditions in some cases now will not have healthcare coverage. And then just let, you know, Trump be Trump, and let that just sort of marinate with the people who are unhappy with him. An interesting question. I didn't see Charlie Cook, who I think said he put 20 new seats up as vulnerable the other day. And we also, there was a good story a few months ago that talked about how a lot of districts that were gonna be vulnerable before AHCA passed were these districts that are a lot like the 6th, places like Laguna Beach, you know, places in Orange County, California, places where people wear tassel loafers and make money. And those people have always been kind of freaked out about Donald Trump. And will this now push them over the edge? I don't know.
I just want to explain a couple of things you said. Talking about James Carville, the Democratic analyst, and then Cook is the Cook Political Report that is very highly regarded in terms of determining, especially some of these House races as well. So then let's talk about the town halls that have been happening. We talked a lot about town halls when there were Tea Party, uprisings. Those Tea Party uprisings are dwarfed by what we've seen in some of the town halls lately. And if you've been watching some of them, they are not, these are not like urban Black Lives Matter protesters. These are often middle class teachers and pipe fitters and people coming there to give their House members a piece of their mind and getting very upset when, as we have here in Georgia, the representatives aren't showing up or canceling town halls. So do we think that those particular optics will have an effect in the way that, say, the Tea Party ones ended up having an effect because of the optics of those? Let me start with you, Martin.
Well, what do you think happened to the Tea Party?
Well, I mean, obviously, thank you. Obviously, the Tea Party, however short-lived it may have been, was successful in getting a number of congresspeople elected.
All right. I think the Tea Party is alive and well. It's just morphed into what you see now as supporting of the President of the United States. So their impact is still being spread. The problem with these sessions that take place with representatives is that they have become a mecca for the discontent, and they are often taken over by those. The media is there. Our cameras are there. They become a great place for people to have a demonstration, only the demonstration is done with the mindset of, well, this is a person who is coming. And you can't always be sure if those people, I hate to side with the representatives, are necessarily from the district in which they're sitting. You know, some have thought about screening people, you can't legitimately do that. So they have become a kind of political theater themselves. And I don't look at those and say, this is a way you know what's going on in the mindset of American voters. I just don't believe that they're a real representation of that. I think you get many people who are upset for many different reasons.
I would say I covered the Women's March here in Atlanta, and I've never seen anything even close to that size. It was astounding. And it was shocking to see that many people walking in Atlanta, not in a car. I live in Decatur, the People's Republic of Decatur, and people are, oh, I hate Trump, I hate his guts. And fine, but then what are you going to do about it? And you can have rallies, and you can go to protests, and you can yell at David Perdue about not having meetings, but the proof is going to be in the midterms. And if you don't show up, if you don't actively work, it doesn't mean anything. Because Donald Trump will be able to say, after the midterms, if he loses 5 seats, he can say, that's normal, I'm great, and he can move on. And so the challenge for the Democratic Party is, what is their message and what's going to work, and they better figure it out fast.
I think the what we're seeing in the town hall meetings is that something that's very real. Passion is very real. In the Georgia 6th, you can feel this angry passion that is being driven by, well-educated, wealthy, really pissed off white women mostly, and their passion is undeniable, whether you agree with them or not. When I was a kid, there was an old punk rock song called God Bows to Math, which I've been thinking about every time I go to the Georgia 6th, because the passion is undeniable. And I think this speaks to the larger question of 2018. The passion is undeniable in Georgia 6th. It's also a place that hasn't sent a Democrat to Congress since like Abscam. So you have the passion on one hand, you just might not have the math. You just might not have the big pile of votes that it takes. And I think in a lot of those kind of swingy districts, that's going to be a really good question. And then it gets beyond the question of Donald Trump, and it gets into you know, who do you choose as a, what kind of Republican are you? This is an election about Karen Handel. As much as it has been nationalized, Karen Handel has a reputation as a Fulton County commissioner. She's run for public office numerous times statewide. She was a Secretary of State. There are a lot of people who are going to feel very comfortable voting for Karen Handel. It doesn't matter what Donald Trump thinks. And I think more broadly, these are going to be the kinds of issues that Republicans are going to have to sort out. Where do you, if you're an incumbent Republican in a tough district, how are you going to position yourself to win over voters as your own person, basically?
Let's go to questions.
Okay, my name is Roddy Freeman. All the interesting stuff that Trump has been creating, the stuff that's on the plate of Congress and the president, healthcare reform, infrastructure, tax reform, is that going to cause all of that not to get passed? Nothing's going to happen legislatively.
That's a great question, and I don't think, if anyone says they have the answer, they're lying to you. I would say that is the ultimate, that's going to be this critical support for the president that will drop if he's just not getting anything done. And I don't know what's going to happen, because I don't know what's going to happen 50 minutes from now.
I mean, I believe it will disrupt as far as what the president's agenda is. Part of the question is also, too, we have to consider what is the media's role in all of this, because, you know, for instance, when I was going out, I believe healthcare is a huge issue for this nation. It's literally life or death. And the Republican plan versus Obamacare, there are some very significant and important differences that the public needs to understand. So as I'm going out to work on this story that is going to look into these differences from a group that seldom speaks politically, doctors, as I'm flying out, I see the headline come across on the TV on the airplane that the director of the FBI has been fired. Okay, that is a big story, please don't get me wrong. But it has occupied the conversation now, at least on the air with the media, and I presume maybe in the administration, for several days now. And this whole story of healthcare, the shows just have not found a place for it and may not find it for days to come due to another revelation about this administration. So there is both whether the administration gets preoccupied by the tweets and by the president, and whether we as media also get so focused on one subject we forget to remind the public, tax reform is a very serious issue, and healthcare is another one, and when are these issues really going to be tackled by Congress and this administration?
My name is Pam Hughes. I'm not a journalist. I was a political science major. I grew up in Northern California, in a town, Auburn, California, that I was raised around Eisenhower Republicans, but our congressman was Biz Johnson, who was a Democrat. And everybody got along, and if you wanted something, you called Biz, and my dad was a school superintendent, and so it's not an anathema, I understand it, but I find this president anathema. Number one, his lying has become, like, I hate to use the expression, the new norm. My question, why do his supporters insist on supporting him with his lying? And some of his lying has to do with the fact that he's dumb. He doesn't know stuff, and he lies about it.
Okay, so the question is why, and it is a verified fact that we get a lot of untruths coming from the Oval Office. Why doesn't that matter to his supporters?
It's not that it doesn't matter. Trump voters, first of all, they're very... It's not like they're a monolithic group. They're very diverse in many ways, both in their ideas and in their makeup. So there are a lot of people who will give him leeway because they like the fact that he is in office. And we've already discussed they did not even want to consider the alternative in this case, which was Hillary Clinton. So he is not a perfect president. He is not even close to a perfect president in their minds. But he is better than the alternative they faced in 2016. As far as the lies, that can vary. Some people say they believe everything he says. Others say, yeah, well, he doesn't really mean that. They've got this way that they feel they can channel what Trump is thinking. and they will express that to you, that when you say, well, you know that's wrong, don't you? And they'll go, well, that's not really what he said, or that's not really what he's thinking. So there are all these different ways that people can interpret. And it is frustrating in an industry where we deal with it's either right or it's wrong, or it's true or it's not. And we are driven mad by these kind of conversations.
That was CNN anchor and correspondent Martin Savage. We also heard from Cam McWhirter of The Wall Street Journal and Richard Fawcett of The New York Times. We have more of that conversation coming up. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. This hour, we're hearing a panel discussion I hosted for the Atlanta Press Club on voter reaction to the Trump administration. I spoke in front of a live audience in Atlanta with three journalists, Cam McWhirter of The Wall Street Journal, Richard Fawcett of The New York Times, and Martin Savage of CNN. Towards the end of the discussion, we took some questions from the audience.
Hi, my name is Cale Davis. I heard from a former Department of Justice attorney last week that there were 11 sealed indictments coming out of New York. Have y'all heard anything about this?
One was actually executed in D.C. on a political office to someone related to the Trump administration. I have heard the same thing, but an indictment, we have to see, wait and see. That Justice Department and our court system is a complicated and quirky thing.
So from what I was told, it was on a couple of campaign staffers and then a few staffers who turned into administration officials for RICO.
Yeah.
So in our line of business, there are these kind of buckets that you can put 99% of your phone calls or emails into. One is, you are a communist and I hate you. The other is, I am a publicist for a very successful lawyer who's written a science fiction book about cats. And it's very compelling, and I think it really warrants front page coverage in the Wall Street Journal. And the third is, the indictments are coming tomorrow. Best I got.
You have a question behind you.
Hi, I'm Ann Sargent. I'm one of those angry white women from District 6. Okay, how many of you are worried that Trump will engage in a military operation to distract from his foibles in Washington?
One thing I would say, I'm from District 5, and I, like I said, I covered that rally, and one of the key moments, key awakening moments, because it was a giant mob, and I'm standing there, and a woman next to me raised her hand. This is the symbol from the Hunger Games, where the rebels, and I thought, oh, it's a joke, and people are standing, and I looked, and nobody was, it wasn't a joke. Like, they really felt like they're in the Hunger Games, and I thought, This election isn't over. But I don't think, I mean, to say that a president, that this president or any president would do that, I think you could, the answer is it's been done in the past. A lot of people are ascribing the conspiratorial things to this president that I don't think is fair, because I don't think that's how he operates. He's much more impulsive.
Another question.
Hi, my name is Warren Gump, and I'm wondering, are any of the Democrats stepping away from the day-to-day combat and really thinking about 2018 and 2020? Are any people emerging and ideas emerging that other than we're not Trump?
Okay, so the question is, are Democrats actually becoming strategic and bigger picture about how to win seats in 2018, or is it still a day-to-day look at what awful thing the Trump administration has done today?
Well, I think we're still waiting to see what that answer is, which is one of the reasons why there are 1,000 journalists in the Georgia 6th at any given moment. I think the Democrats are going to work very hard to weaponize this healthcare bill. I think that's going to be huge. Beyond that, I just think we have to see, you know, I think it was Charles Bullock who said to me when I wrote my first Georgia 6th district story, it's really hard to predict. Who knows what this president's going to do a few weeks down the road. I mean, there could be more issues that Democrats could use against the Republicans. If not, it seems like right now healthcare is really, really the big one that they're going to key on.
Another question?
Yes, hi. I'm Reese McCraney, and I have a question about, impeachment, really. And you guys have probably better sources than anybody else. You knew it was coming, right? But my question is, you guys have better sources than anybody else probably in this room or on this side of the interstate. Are you hearing anything from any of your colleagues in any of your newsrooms and any of your outlets about someone, you know, mounting an effort? Is there any energy around that? Is it even pie in the sky? Or at what point does a discussion like that actually become, you know, viable?
Okay, so the question is about impeachment and whether that could happen. Now, the wrinkle, of course, is that Congress is controlled by the Republicans. So the question for our panel then would be, under what circumstances, or are we hearing any rumblings that the Republicans would actually be willing to vote for articles of impeachment?
Yeah, I mean, I think, we don't have a magic connection to Congress here. I think that FBI, the firing of Comey brought up, you know, part of the Republican Party started to crack. And I don't know where that's going to lead, but ultimately, if we go back to history, Richard Nixon had great support from the Republican Party, and then at a certain point, it cracked and it came apart, and some people started to speak out loud. I don't know if that's going to happen here. I have no idea.
Let me ask you a different, completely theoretical and impossible to answer question then. Let's say that 2018 goes the way that Cook thinks that it will, that the Democrats take over the House. Let's say that the Democrats then are in a position to at least bring forward articles of impeachment. Do we think they would? Richard?
I don't know. I mean, you also have the Senate, right? 2018 is not a good year, does not stack up as a good year for the Democrats. So you know, you have two houses. It's a tough one. I think everyone's going to be watching in the press and elsewhere to see whether we're at the floor for Trump support. Does it go beneath 36, 39, 40, whatever it is now? And you know, the Republican Party has a message that resonates very broadly, very deeply with a lot of Americans and a lot of states. I'm sure there are lots of conversations being had now about, you know, in individual districts about, well, at what point do we peel away? You know, I'm an appealing candidate without Donald Trump. We were here before him. He used to be a Democrat. When do we just kind of cut the line? I think if you see his numbers continue to go down, if they do go down, you're going to see much more serious conversations of that kind.
As much as if you may not like Trump or you really are unhappy with the outcome of this election, to wish or hope for or to even speculate on that kind of trauma that it would bring to our nation politically, that it would bring to the disruption in Washington. You know, in the last days of the Nixon administration, there was even talk of removing the codes from him because they were fearful of what he might do. This is a very, very serious step to take. And in a modern age where we are now as a nation so divided, at least in the way we express ourselves publicly, the thought of that really going forward, as much as it might bring some glee to some.
That may be true, what you just said, but I think as much as we talk to Trump voters, we talk to people who don't like Trump, and I'd say a good majority of America is there. They're there. They're ready for that.
Maria Saporta, journalist. We talk about America divided. When I go around and talk to folks, the reason that they say we're so divided is because of our congressional districting that we've done, where we've created very Republican districts and very Democratic districts, and we've kind of eliminated the idea of moderate or competitive districts. Is there a possibility in your mind that one of the results that could come out from the current administration we're having and the public response to it would be a call to have citizen-based redistricting for the 2020 census.
And it's a great question because the courts are going to be weighing in on gerrymandering as well in the days ahead. So here's the question. Is there a possibility we will see, Cam can't wait to answer this question about gerrymandering.
Absolutely not.
Meaning he says it'll never happen that we will have citizens or independent commissions. There are states that use independent commissions. There are a handful of states that do have independent commissions. Georgia's not one of them.
But could there be a movement for that?
Could there be a movement for that to happen? If there is, we'll report on it. Another question?
Mary Lynn Ryan, Southeast Bureau Chief for CNN. So my question is to all three of you. I probably know what Martin's going to say, but the other two I want to hear. At what point do we... I lost the thought. What point are we able to move forward? There are a lot of people in the South who think differently than the vortex of the media up in the Northeast. And there's a big difference in the media capital of the world, which is Washington, New York, you know, all up in the Northeast, and then there's the rest of the country. There's a big difference there, and the media is really centralized there. I know we all report in the South. Martin travels all around the country. What are your thoughts on that? Because I think there's a lot more of the Trump supporters in the Midwest, the West, and in the South than there are in the Northeast and in California. And the media resides. I lived in Manhattan and I worked in Manhattan. It is the center of the media universe. So do you think that that's part of why it's so predominantly anti-Trump in the media?
I think as an industry, journalists are always contrarians. I think we always take the attitude if it's not broke, then don't fix it. So we focus on those things where we see wrongs or those things where we see problems or those things that we believe need the spotlight of illumination. So I think that's where we're always looked upon as the troublemakers, or we're looked upon as the rabble rousers, but in fact we're doing our job of trying to show you there's an issue here. It's up to the public to determine how to deal with it. The media being focused in the Northeast, there's probably some point to be brought to that. I think that's why Ted Turner, we celebrated the fact that CNN started in some place other than New York. I find, as much as we talk about the divide in America, I will tell you that the more I go out and have conversations with people in America, the better I feel. That the many of the people I talk to are level-headed, that they are not seething, ranting lunatics, and that I am reassured more and more with the conversation of people out in America than I am with politicians or that which I hear from the political panels and those who seem to fire us all up. If I have any faith in America, it's in the people more so than in the politics, and that's why I know that we will get through this. We will get through it.
Executive editor of the New York Times has told us in no uncertain terms that we are by no means supposed to think of ourselves as an opposition or aligned with any kind of opposition to Donald Trump. Our job is to try to be fair, report the facts, and let the chips fall where they may. I think it's the best course of action. We have an opinion page that runs a totally separate shop for those of us who report the news. We're just trying to be fair and trying to be as accurate as possible the way we were, a year ago.
We have time for one more question, and I'm going to ask it. And that is, here we are, we're done with 100 days. And as we're moving forward, there are a ton of balls up in the air, right? We've got Comey. We've got this new information about confidential material revealed to the Russians. We still have questions of the emoluments clause and whether or not, because Trump never divested from his businesses. We have questions about Jared Kushner and his qualifications and about Ivanka going to high-level meetings with foreign policy. I can't even list the number of questions of things that could become really important in the days ahead, in the next 100 days. But I want to ask each of you, and unfortunately we'll have to keep it relatively brief, but I want to have each of you, if you were going to bet, What do you think is going to emerge as one of our leading stories? What might it be? Let me start with you, Cam.
I think Russia is going to continue to be a major issue. And if that keeps growing, it's going to be a constant problem for the president.
Yes, and and this has been sort of a recurring theme, but I think the question of the healthcare bill and what that means for 2018. And I don't know if this is going to happen. The New York Times is certainly, I don't want to be in the prediction business, especially after November. But you can see a chain of events where, you wonder whether who's going to take the House in 2018. If the Democrats take the House, whether they feel compelled to impeach him. All this ties together politically.
I can't give you an answer. Only because I look at the last election in which everyone tried to apply the common political knowledge of what should happen. And if I had a dime for every time somebody said, stick a fork in him, he's done. And of course, he wasn't done. He became president of the United States. Too often now we are trying to apply traditional thought to what is a totally non-traditional president and perhaps a completely non-traditional administration. And in a lot of ways, gravity has been suspended here. So I think it's really impossible to tell you what may come next or how. And I think it would be too arrogant to think that we in the media know, or we should drive that conversation.
That was CNN anchor and correspondent Martin Savage. We also heard from Cam McWhirter of The Wall Street Journal and Richard Fawcett of The New York Times. They were part of a panel discussion organized by the Atlanta Press Club earlier this week. And that's our show for today, but have your feelings about President Trump, either positive or negative, changed since the election? Call 404-500-9457. You can also tweet us. Our handle is @OSTTalk. For today, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headlee. Have a great day.